Reading FC are having an interesting 2020, not quite as good as 2019 started or even indeed ended, as we go through a tricky patch, you could say, of five league games without a win. But while you can say the results aren't good enough or that we're conceding certain goals that you might not want to concede, there seems to be something that's bugging me, and it's the attack. We're wanting goals at the moment, and after a 1-0 defeat to Bristol City in the week and a 1-1 draw at Cardiff on Friday night. Welcome to episode 219 of the Tireless Den podcast with your host Mark Mayo, and Alan Westy is joining me this week. How's it going, mate?
Yeah, very good, Mark. Looking forward to it.
Yes, well, we've had an interesting week, as I say, with two very sort of tight games, and we'll move on to the recap and then of course the mailbag and news bites and big match preview later on. So before we do that, a quick thank you of course to our podcast sponsor ZTZ Films, who put their hand in their pocket and will hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we've got some nice new microphones and stuff on order, so hopefully the quality of the podcast will at least audio terms, the level of script writing and everything like that will probably remain as terrible as ever, and also to our Patreon subscribers who continue to put their hand in their pocket as well. So without further ado, let's get on then, Westy, and talk about a couple of interesting games this week.
Come rain or shine, it's time to relive the latest match action with the recap.
This podcast is sponsored by ZCZ Films, Reading's oldest ultras.
Quick word on Bristol City then, Westy, because as both of us, I imagine, probably at that game, and I'm not too sure that either of us made the Friday night trip up to Cardiff, although a Friday night in Cardiff is always a good night out. But that Bristol City game, 1-0 defeat, it just felt to me like we didn't quite get going in this game, and up against a Bristol City team that knew how to defend, well-drilled. It just seemed like it was just one of those games. It felt like a one-goal game, and as soon as we fell asleep for their goal, that was almost it.
Yeah, I sort of debated it when I got back to work the next day, and I said realistically, it should have been a draw game. I think neither team were particularly great. I think both teams had spells in the game where they were good, but on the balance of it, I thought, like you said, whoever scored the goal first goal was going to win the game. That's exactly what happened. I don't think either goalkeeper had a lot of work to do during the match. It's just disappointing. Reading had them cleared off the line at the back end of the game when they actually went for it. I was just disappointed to see them not get something out of it, because I didn't think they deserved a defeat. But on the same token, I didn't think they deserved to win the game either.
It's a bit of a theme now, and you listen to Mark Bowen's chats as well with the media, that when we do have that kind of late spell, the last 10-15 minutes, we do look really decent. And it's kind of the begging question as to why aren't we doing that from the start, especially at home. You know, Bristol City are a decent team, but you like to get the sort of early goal and everything, and we do so well when we do get it. What stopped us from doing it in this game? Was it just a case that we were too slow? Were the individual players not sort of creating as much as they wanted to? Was it the fact that we had a striker up front in George Puskas, who is ultimately bang out of form?
Yeah, I think a combination of a couple of events, really. I think I'm glad that he went to up front against Cardiff. I think if we go back in the podcast history, I probably said that 3 months ago, you can't play any of them up front on their own. It does put extra pressure on your midfield and then your defence, because you're constantly getting the ball back all the time. Again, it's no criticism of the players that are up front. It's just not their game. And Lucas Joule does it so well. That we've missed him, and we've gone over this and over this. We do miss him. But you have to come up with a different way of playing. He's gone back to playing two up front. I think that's all you can do with the players he's got at the moment. I don't think anyone could fill that role. And the fact, if you look at the last, except for the Fulham game where we scored two goals, we've only scored one goal in the next, apart from the FA Cup, five or six games. So it just goes to show there's a problem scoring goals. And, you know, defensively, I think we've been very good. I think we look very solid. Teams having a lot of shots against us, but not really testing the goalkeeper. We look solid at the back, and the midfield, we know the midfield's good. Like I say, the pressure they come under for a whole 90 minutes when you haven't got a strike and holdable up front is obviously weighing heavy on us, because we're not winning games all of a sudden, and we're not scoring enough to win games either.
Does the midfield have to take a lot of the flak for that anyway? Because for me, I mean, I watched the Cardiff game on a bit of a stream while I was at work, so I wasn't paying the most attention to it as possible. But for me, there weren't any moments where I looked at particularly Swift and Ajari, apart from the goal which Swift did very well for. Ajari in particular, over the last few weeks, the number of moments where I can sit there and think that was a really good piece of play that Ajarian made has dropped off considerably. And while perhaps it is unrealistic to expect him to completely skin seven players every game like he was at the start of the year, he has in his attacking contribution for me fallen away. And given that, you know, earlier in the season there was also that spell when Swift and Ajarian were injured and we did, you know, quite poorly, they are dropping off a little bit for me. And I do think that with, you know, the strike situation, as we just said, those two dropping off as well, then it just, there's nowhere else to turn, really.
I suppose the thing is it a combination of the same thing? You know, if you've got a striker that's holding the ball there, then the midfielders can get up with him and support him. Now, if you've got a player that the ball keeps coming back off all the time, do they automatically think, we need to step off a bit here and sit back because this ball's going to come back pretty quick? I don't know. I'm just guessing. But if I was a player, that's exactly what I'd be thinking. You're not going to overcommit yourself going forward because you know that the ball might be coming back pretty quickly. Rightly or wrongly, I don't know. But I would have said that's probably got something to do with it, the fact that they don't feel that they can get forward as quick as they would normally because the ball might end up coming back pretty fast. And obviously, Bowen's shored them up defensively, and maybe that's part of the plan, you know, for them to sit in a bit more. I know we've got holding midfielders to do that job, but even so, you need to be solid through the middle. And we can't say they haven't been solid through the middle, but like I said, the goals have dropped off, and I think that's just plainly down to the fact that the players up front haven't been doing it.
Well, as you said, we did move back to the 3-5-2 for the Cardiff game on Friday night with Riaku Meite. Meite did have a really good spell off the bench, actually, against Bristol City. Worth mentioning, I think he hit the post in that melee you alluded to where Gunter had a shot cleared off the line
Again, Mark, he was a problem when he came on because the two centre-backs were having an easy time of it, weren't they? They knew that there was no one going to be able to push him around. No one was going to beat him for pace over the top. And they had a quite easy afternoon, really, or evening, sorry. Quite an easy evening. But when Meite come on, he did put himself about. He was a bit bullish. It always reminds me a little bit of Antonio when he was here. He's sort of a bit of a bull in a china shop. And he did sort of what I've criticised him for. He did put his weight around a little bit. He got around the pitch. He caused some problems. And they struggled to cope with him. He probably should have scored a goal, to be fair. But with the other two, you don't get them issues. And I think until he came on, he did make a big difference. And even in the game against Cardiff, same sort of thing. You know that if he does what he could do and he should do more regularly, he could score a goal for you. And that's exactly what he done. And he's a bit of a brute, isn't he? And I think centre-backs don't always particularly like playing against some sort of players. Whereas you've got Baldock and Puskas are quite easy to play. If they're in front of you, they're quite easy to play against. Baldock, you can never criticise him for his work rate, but he's very light, isn't he? And I think sometimes he's quite easy to mark if you're a big, strong, strapping centre-back.
Yeah, which is why I think you need Meite alongside him as the almost the little and large to an extent. And, you know, you say Meite is the brute. That's literally his nickname on Twitter, isn't it? So he wears that with a lot of pride. And we got to, you know, looking back on the Cardiff result, the goal that they scored came from a long throw. I think Morrison nicks it onto his own post and then it's just a tap in from there. Otherwise, you know, Raphael had to make a late save, but there was a lot of pressure in the second half, but not too many chances really. And we're getting into this stage now where we've lost one game of our last 9 away trips in the league, or, you know, probably even longer than that if you had FA Cup, but that compares to the fact that we had one win in 7 before that. So to only have one away loss in the last 9, there's a lot of draws in that, and you could say whether that's, you know, good draws or bad draws, but that's a genuinely really impressive record. And I think it underlines that kind of mentality that Bowen is taking now, and it's kind of baby steps with this team, isn't it? Because we've not gone from saying, oh, we're going to lose every game to win every game. We say we're going to lose games to drawing games, and then hopefully at some point in the next, you know, month or whatever, or next few months, we can make that step from drawing games to winning games. And that's, I think it's a bit of a, it is a much more sensible sort of progression that we're actually trying to make now.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they're very solid now, aren't they, Reading? You don't expect to see them concede 3 goals anymore like you did under Gomez. You just think they're going to stay in games, and that's exactly what they're doing. And I think if you look at the stats in most of the matches they've had away from home, Reading haven't created a great deal of scoring opportunities, but they've managed to nick a goal. And the other teams having a lot of shots, but not really forcing the goalkeeper to many saves. Cardiff game is a great example of that. I thought Reading were quite comfortable in the first half. And when the second half came, you expected the pressure to come. Unfortunately, I thought their goal was quite lucky in the fact that it hit the post and come straight back to their player and he had a tap in. On another day, it might have bounced the other side and we'd have cleared the ball. But they didn't even when they scored, I didn't think they was going to go on to get a winner. I thought Reading were relatively comfortable. And I think when you look at it, it's 1-1 away at Cardiff. It's not a bad result, was it, really?
No, it's not. And we did actually have a bit of a late rally for the last 5 minutes. And I do kind of wonder whether we're a bit... Yeah, with the lateness of how long it took us to get back into the game during that second half, whether there is a sense of being tired and maybe a bit of a time for a refresh in the sort of personnel, because we've had, you know, Tuesday, Saturday games, and we're going to keep getting Tuesday, Saturday games as we have Cardiff in midweek and then West Brom coming up the midweek after. Do you think that there is, looking at the bench, Charlie Adams kind of dropped out of the team a little bit recently, as has Andy Rinomata. Do you think there is a bit of a case for a bit of a refresh with, you know, Ajaria or Swift or someone like that, just to kind of keep moving the team around rather than letting it stagnate?
Not really. I think, again, going back to the Bristol City game, I thought Pelé, I criticised him early in the season for, I didn't really see what he'd done. I think he's been excellent last 2 or 3 weeks, and I thought against Bristol City he had a really, really good game. You could argue that maybe he could have a rest, but do you want him to while he's on form? I don't think anyone's really banging on the door to start either. I know Charlie Adams had a decent run in the team, but you know he hasn't got the legs, and I think, especially away from home, I think they want to stay solid, try and nick a goal and then win a game like that, and that's basically what they've been doing. I don't think there's any need for a refresh. I think Swift and Ajaria, again, they will slide in and out of form, but they've been, I think you've got to say, pair of them. I mean, Swift's assist, I think he's assisted 9 now, is it? Something around about that area. And again, another assist again on Friday night. I just think they're good at what they do. Ajaria keeps the ball well, and Pele's been good at stopping teams getting too close to our back two or back three centre-backs. I think it's just the goals. If they could just, you know, score a few more goals, they've... I know it sounds stupid, but they win a few more games, and I think they're solid. You know, you can't see them conceding a lot, but unfortunately, with that, we're not scoring an awful lot. But you need a happy balance, I suppose. And I think we're just sort of, if we had someone up front who was a bit more prolific, a bit more of a handful, I think we'd fly at the league. I really do. I know the season's halfway through now; it's nearly done. I'm still quite excited about this side. Unfortunately, probably get to the end of the season, we'll get broken up again, but I think they're close to being there. They're there or thereabouts, you know, and they just need that little extra spark to make them a very good Championship side.
Yeah, it's funny, isn't it? It's not. It doesn't feel like we're begging for, oh, just play 3 up front or just play 4 up front and that'll solve all our problems. Because it's not the numbers, is it, of the strikers? It's the quality of the strikers. Yeah. And that we have taken Zhao out of the equation, who's injured for at least a month or so. And is on good form, but the other strikers all seem to be at the same level of quality, don't they? There's no one standout or even one complete drop-off old no-hoper. It's all that kind of lower mid-championship quality. Get your, you know, 8 goals a season, but, you know, for playoffs you need someone who's going to get you 15 or 20, and that's kind of the thing that I suppose we're lacking at the moment. We're talking about the rotations and whatnot. We'll obviously get onto the Cardiff FA Cup replay in a bit, and it'll be interesting to see how many we change around for that. But Mark Bowen is the man in charge, of course, of that, and we'll hear from him now before we jump into the mailbag.
Well, I guess it was deserved. Well, up for both sides, really, but you're always gutted, really, when you're in front in the game. But, you know, we've stood up to the challenge. It's always a huge physical challenge. We'll have it again on Tuesday against you. You know, West Brom came in the week last week and went under. So you've got to be brave and put up with, you know, direct football and second balls, and we did all that. I mean, even the goal they scored was probably about the, I don't know, 20th long throw they had. Another foul throw, I must add. But, you know, Michael Morrison got his head to it first, and luckily came off the back of his head and hits the post, comes back out. And it wasn't a question of them reacting quicker, because Tom McIntyre was there, it just fell to the fella. So, a bit unlucky, or very unlucky on that occasion, I thought. But this will be stood up the challenge. Genuinely, I mean, we talk to the lads in there, we'll always strive for, could we have been a bit better to play our game when we got possession? Yeah, I think so, to a certain degree. But we'll take an away point that's hard earned. But yeah, when you're in front, it's difficult to come away with a point, you know, because you think maybe we should have won it.
For all the latest Reading news, analysis and opinion, visit the website at thetilehurstend.com.
Bit of a short mailbag this week, Westy. I think the 1-1 draw at Cardiff against the fellow mid-table championship team, maybe not igniting the fan base, as it...
There's been a lot of draws, isn't there? A lot of sort of one against 1-4. And there was the odd one against Bristol City where they turned us over. But I thought, again, Reading were more than in that game. So there's not really a lot to complain about. Is there? I think everyone's of the same sort of mind that they're there or thereabouts, but they're just not, just that little next level they don't seem to be able to get to at the moment. I think what was disappointing, though, just before we start the mailbag side, was the crowd against Bristol City. That was horrendous for a home game, I thought, a sort of 11,000. I mean, it looked empty.
It felt really thin. It's one of those where you look at, like, for my northeast corner, I looked across to the west stand and you just think the crowd just kind of ended after, almost immediately after the centre circle.
And I mean, that's a concern, isn't it, Mark? I think that's a concern. I think everyone's sort of, because of where we are in the league, I think everyone's sort of give up on the season. They all think, well, I think we're going to finish about 12th, 13th, and they're sort of floating fans not really going to come for the back end of the season, which is a shame.
Yeah, well, it's also hopefully it's just the case that it was a bit of a chilly Tuesday night. We played on a Saturday as well, home to Cardiff. So
I think, Mark, that people thought he was going to be on the red button and was disappointed when they sat there and it didn't happen.
Yeah, well, as it was a rearranged game, it wasn't actually down for being on Sky. So with those Tuesday night games, I think that so many fans, I think, just call them a write-off now in a sense. And because you can watch pretty much all of them on from your TV, and with it being a pretty chilly January night, it's just a case that a lot of fans just find it quite easy to turn away these days, and for better or worse, they're just they'll sit in and watch it. But whether the red button thing lasts for another few years is going to be very interesting. Whether Sky keep hold of the rights and everything is a discussion to be had, and whether we want them to is also a discussion to be had with the future of Championship football. I personally think that it's massively underpaid for the TV rights and everything that it gets. But, there we go. Hopefully Reading fans will turn up. And John House saying this week that we must win against Hull. Hull looked a mess against Brentford. Hull have actually just, we'll talk about it later, but Hull have sold their best two players in the last week, Westy. Kamil Grzycki and Jared Bowen going, with no real replacement coming. So the idea that Hull is a must win, is that kind of out of the basis that we need it for our season, or you just need to beat these teams who aren't looking very good?
Yeah, I think if you look at the fixtures we've got after Hull, I think Hull's probably our easiest game for a few weeks, and as easy goes in Championship football. They've lost the best two players. They were hammered at the weekend. Confidence and morale must be low around there at the moment. If you don't beat them, I think we'd all be pretty disappointed.
Yeah, absolutely. And Scott from the States with another question. He says that Liverpool, a team that I don't think we ever really talk about on this podcast for obvious reasons, they're on pace for 110 points, with the fact that they've obviously won pretty much every game in the Premier League this season. If they top 106, will we have to stop the We've Got the Record song, or can we continue to sing about our record for the most points in a Football League season? I think that what Liverpool need to do, someone told me that they need to win 11 of their final 13 games to beat 106, which I think in a 38 game season, I don't think they will do that, but I certainly would be foolish to completely rule it out. I must say, Westy, if they do it, we've got to stop singing the song, because Football League or Premier League, it's all the same. Just the fact they've done it in 38 games compared to 46, I think, sadly, if they beat the record, that's it.
No, I think we claim it as a Championship record, so we can still carry on singing it.
Well, Championship record, I think, is fair enough. But Football League record, I think that'll probably have to go. But
I don't think Liverpool will ever beat our Championship record, let's put it that way.
No, probably not. And looking at West Brom and Leeds at the moment, I think they might well have surrendered their chance of taking out our record as well this year. So the Championship record is safe, as I think. I mean, do you actually see it in the next, let's say, 10 years? Do you think anyone's going to take it? Because I don't think the nature of the Championship now, maybe you can say it's more competitive, tougher. I think the money floating around means that I don't think it's going to be beaten in the next 10 years, because if there is ever a team that is just so ridiculously clear, I don't think a team will allow it. Other teams will invest in January, other teams will have the target on their head even more than Reading had a target on their head. I don't think it's going to get beaten in the Championship for a good 10 years.
No, I agree with you. I think it's a very tough record to break. Like you said, I think a lot of sides in the Championship now invest a lot of money in players, and I think it's much more competitive maybe than when we done it. Not to take that anything away from us, we were excellent that year, and we showed it the next year in the Premier League. We were a Premier League side in the Championship. Now, unless someone's going to invest massive money and fly up that league and have a Premier League side like we were fortunate to get, then I can't see anyone break it. And even if you have got a really good side, like say 106 points, is very difficult to beat. And when it does get beat, because it will do one day, I'll look back on that Luton away game and that Plymouth game, both games we should have won, and we probably have had more points. So I'd be slightly disappointed, I think, if it ever gets broken.
Yeah, well, that Plymouth game, I do wonder if that Plymouth game was kind of essential, as it were, to actually going on and winning and getting the record and doing the unbeaten run, because obviously the quality of the side was immense. But whether you win that game, whether they kind of needed to lose it in a way just to kind of focus the mind, I suppose, is a discussion. Maybe one day on the podcast we'll have another player from that season and we can kind of ask them about it. But we'll jump into news bites now and look at just how... Well, it's been transfer deadline day, Westy, and I don't know if you were up for 11 p.m. On Friday. It's a number of deadlines that people were interested in on that day, but transfer deadline day, for us at least, it had a few things going on.
Be loud and be proud and back the boys and make some noise. Come on, you Oz!
Shout out to this week's podcast sponsor, ZCZ Films, showing that age is no barrier to being a hooly hoop.
Let's cover the outgoings before we get to the exciting arrivals of the last week of the transfer window, Westy, because we've waved goodbye to Teddy Howe, who's gone to Blackpool on a permanent deal. Miles Roberts is an academy goalkeeper, has gone to Watford. We've loaned out Ben House to Dagenham Redbridge. We've loaned out Vito Minoni to Esbjerg. That's the end we'll see of him. His contract's up in the summer. And Mark McNulty switched over back to Hibs on loan. He was at Sunderland previously. Of any of those names, particularly Teddy Howe, who played in the Blackpool FA Cup game and gave away a penalty, is there anyone that you think probably a bad player to let go? Was Minoni or McNulty ever going to be someone worth bringing back in, or those just kind of, you know, reasonable enough deals?
Yeah, that's, I think the only one I was slightly disappointed with is Teddy Howe. I thought when I've seen him, I thought he looks like a good player. I think what's happened there, though, just looking from behind the scenes, is he's got to a stage in his career where he's got to an age where he says, I want to play first team football, and I'm sure that when Yidam's fit, he will go straight back into that side and he'll be sat on the bench. So maybe for his career, he thought maybe it'd be good to take a step back to be able to move forward again. But like I said, he's a good player, and I think he's going to be here next year. I'm not sure. Would have been a good understudy. Yeah, I think he would have been. But then throw the curveball, I know you're going to mention in a minute, the Brazilian guy we brought in, he can play right back. So maybe the club thought, you know what, we don't need you here, so you can go and find your way another way.
Well, it does feel like if Yudim's going to be fit, and obviously if no one's going to pay £8 million for him, then he is just going to be the undisputed number one right back for, you know, at least the next 2 or 3 years, depending on anything unfortunate happening. So the club probably can look at it. And for us, I agree, it would have been nice to have Teddy Howe as the academy right back just to play backup, but we've got Tanai Watson, might not have much of a future. We've got Chris Gunter till the end of the season. Are we absolutely ruling out Chris Gunter staying?
No.
The idea of a one-year contract extension, because he's only going to go to another lower mid-table championship club.
Yeah, no, he's a great understudy, Gunter, and if he wants to stay, then I'm sure most of us will think, OK, well, that's a great player to have as backup to Yidam. I think there's no doubt that Yidam's going to be your first choice. I think we've seen enough of him to know that he's a better all-round player than Gunter. But yeah, I think Gunter will end up going, just basically because his wages are probably quite high and Reading will look to offload him knowing they've got plenty of backup. Unless he's going to take a pay cut, they might well say to him, you can have another two-year deal as long as you take half a pay cut. And he might say, yeah. Depends what deals he can get elsewhere, I suppose.
Yeah, it depends if he wants to, you know, move up to Middlesbrough or move up to Hull or wherever else he's going to have to go. If he's happy in Reading, then not too far from his homeland, he might consider it worth the price worth paying. In terms of the incomings then, you mentioned him, Felipe Araruna. I got in touch with, I have a Brazilian friend who's a bit of a journalist, and well, I say a bit of a journalist, she is actually a proper journalist, so I'll give her a hint. She says to me that he's not got that sort of Brazilian flair that you'd expect from certain Brazilian players, but he's on the good side of average. And I suppose Reading at the moment themselves are on the good side of average, so that's probably not too bad an idea. But a midfielder on a 2.5-year deal, the Anchorman role is some, you know, we kind of got two players for that if we are happy to put Rinomoto in that category. The question is with him really is whether we actually needed him.
Well, I don't think we need him this season, but I think it suggests that Pele's not going to be staying here past the end of the season. And in that case, then you're going to need a holding midfielder. I suspect Charlie Adam will leave as well. So there's his position. All of a sudden, he's maybe first choice. I've made the mistake of watching him on YouTube, where everyone looks like a world beater. I'm well aware of that. But yeah, I sat and watched a few of his games that he played in. He looks like he's a good player for breaking up play. I don't want to compare him to Ledgerwood because he looks like a slightly better footballer than him, but he does look like that sort of player, you know, that he will break up play, play the easy ball. And he looked decent. He looked like he had a good first touch. He had a change of pace. So yeah, if he's a good side of average, then I think that's about our level. So I think he could do a decent job for us. But like I said, I only see him on YouTube and I wouldn't like to say I was an expert.
I will always remember the only Reading signing that I've ever bothered to go onto YouTube and actually sit down and watch a compilation of his highlights was Danzel Gravenberch. And I watched him round the goalkeeper and score a tap-in for Ajax, Young or whatever. And it is so far away from the actual player that we got. It was it scarred me for life as thinking of why am I watching this sort of thing. So yeah,
well, I said this before, Mark. I sat and watched Royston Drenthe on the internet, and I thought we'd signed probably the best player in the world at the time. but then I flicked down a few, and there was another one that had Royston Drenthe's name on it. I thought I'd watch that. And let's put it this way: the guy who put this together was far from complimentary about Drenthe's skills. And if you watch that video, you realise that he probably is not as good as he looked on the other video.
Well, the video where he looks good was probably the one where he beats the man, and the video where he looked awful is probably what happened next.
That is exactly the way it ran, yeah.
The actual shot or cross that he delivered. We have got a winger coming as well. Ayab Timbe Masika. Apologies to anyone who might be saying that I've mispronounced that, and there genuinely might be some new fans listening to the podcast this week, because this lad, he's arrived from Beijing Ren on loan. That's obviously the club that's owned by Dai Yong, the Reading owner, in China, the second tier, I think. He had a bit of an injury hit season last year, only played about 850 minutes. But the thing that's most prevalent from the signing of this Kenyan winger is the sheer amount of fans that have made themselves known on social media as being so excited by, I think he's only the second Kenyan player to arrive for an English club after Victor Wanyama for Spurs. So the very interesting following that he's going to have over the next few months. Is he going to play too much? I suppose he's not been up to speed, a bit injury hit, a bit, you know, Chinese season ended a little while ago, so it might take him a little while to get up into the team. But Westy, this is a very wild card signing, I suppose.
It is, and it's a very rare occasion where a trialist gets signed. So they must have seen something in him. From what I understand, he's got a bit of a turn of foot about him, which is what we've been missing down in the wide areas of recent. I think he might be one of these players that we sort of see last 20, 25 minutes of games, if we're struggling, sort of try and turn it round. Hopefully he'll come and do well. And if he does, I'm sure they'll sign him full time. But it's all there for him now, isn't it? I mean, he's got to come and impress. And I'm sure he'll be doing everything he possibly can to make sure that happens. He's obviously done it during training. Whether he can do it in a championship rigours, we'll soon see. But good luck to him. I think, you know, I mean, it's a big opportunity for him, and it's up to him to take it. So we know when he steps onto that pitch, he's going to give it everything he's got. Hopefully, he's got plenty to offer us.
Absolutely. And hopefully he turns out to be that. We haven't got many wingers at the moment, so hopefully he turns out to be that sort of X-factor sort of player that we need. It does kind of remind me, in the stakes of signing an unknown winger from abroad on loan halfway through a season, who sounds a bit tricky. It reminds me of when we signed Omar Daly in about 2004, who turned up, and I think we got him on loan from an American team, and he was that sort of winger who, he got the ball, everyone was kind of excited, oh, what's he going to kind of do? But he only played about four times and then went back home, and that was kind of it. So hopefully we've got a better player this time.
Saying that, Mark, I think Jimmy Kebbe was very similar. He was on loan to some League Two French side, and he's certainly done all right for us. So maybe he can come and be the new Jimmy Kebbe. That'd be nice.
That would be very nice. I hadn't thought about that. I'd definitely take a new Jimmy Kebbe. Let's round off. Let's see how he goes then. As I said, I'm not sure he's going to necessarily be in the team this week, having not played too much recently. But let's before we talk about those games, just round off for you the other things that have been going on around Reading FC in the last week. The under-23s drew 1-1 at Colchester in the Premier League Cup. That's a group stage game, so they're playing Swansea in the Premier League Cup on the 8th. They've got a Premier League clash at Stoke on Monday evening, so that's kind of tonight, so you can catch up on that on the Tarlist then, and also on the Reading FC Academy Twitter page. Under-18s lost 4-1 at home to league leaders Fulham on Saturday. They also got a Swansea next. They're now 9th in the Premier League South, so they're 10 points clear of bottom, 18 points away from top, so pretty, you know, decent enough sort of season for the under-18s there. And the women's team, they had a late Farrell Williams penalty, scored to draw 1-1 at home to Man United on the weekend. They're now 6th. 5-0 win at London City in the FA Cup the week before, so they've now got an FA Cup tie away at Leicester to look forward to. Should be a winning game, that. And they next go away to Bristol City on Sunday, February the 9th. Reading, the senior men's team, have Cardiff away again on Tuesday, so let's talk about that now.
You're listening to the Tilehurst End Podcast, by Reading fans, for Reading fans.
Right, Westy, we are currently two games into our three-game series with Cardiff. If in baseball terms, you'd say it's the series decider now. There's the 2-1-all draws, and now we get to see who's going to claim the series victory. This probably, is it the most important game of the three? FA Cup replay, obviously a game at home to Sheffield United to sort of go for. 7:45 kickoff then. This game, is, you know, how important is it for us?
I think it's very important. I think it's very important for the season because, like I said earlier, I don't see Reading getting in the top six. I think it's going to take a real effort to get there. And I don't think they've got the firepower, but they certainly, based on the fact they don't concede very many goals, aren't going to end up anywhere near the relegation zone. So I'd be surprised if he didn't put out the strongest team available, to be fair. We had an extra day recovery. Saturday, we're at home. It's a Tuesday night game. I can't see why you would risk getting beat, at least not give it everything you had to win the match. Because like I say, we've got Sheffield United at home if we get through. I'm sure they won't play their full team because they've got a good opportunity to get into Europe. They might do, but I'd assume they'd drop a few players and rest them. So we're at home again. It's a good opportunity to get a long way in the cup. And I think, especially with the crowds dropping off, I think an FA Cup run is pretty much essential.
With the, you know, with the sort of argument for playing the under-23s and the reserves and everything, is there a kind of worry that we'd be a bit too predictable playing the same teams we played on Friday night? Do we as fans, obviously being in the game, you might be able to disprove this completely, but do we as fans worry that you kind of go and play the same game twice and that therefore the team's a bit more familiar? Does that change the dynamic of the game? Do we think that they're more likely to be a bit more standoffish? They're more likely to go for it, having learned each other's weaknesses? Do we think that, you know, does the nature of the game change if the two teams that play each other are exactly the same teams that played each other, you know, 3 days before?
Who knows? Like I said, you never know what will come in any game of football. I mean, I sat and watched that Tottenham-Man City game yesterday, and when you've got a penalty call and the game goes on for 3.5 minutes, you know, it's amazing the twists and turns that can come. If Man City would have scored their penalty, then it would be a different game. How they lost that game, I don't know, but they did. If that happened again, if they put out the same side, would you have the same game? No, you wouldn't, would you? Anything can happen. So I don't think it makes a great deal of difference. I just think, if anything, the FA Cup allows you to be a bit freer because you're not so concerned of getting points on the board. I think you can be a bit more forward thinking. You can say, let's take the game to them, let's go for it. I'd just be disappointed if they didn't put out a strong side. I mean, I don't think anyone would be bothered if you put Rinomota in instead of Pele. You know, them sort of changes are fine. But as for everyone else, I can't see why they wouldn't start. You know what I mean? Maybe Puskas for Bulldog, but give them a game. Just try and win the match. And if you get beat trying to win, then fair enough. But if you go there, put in 4 or 5 under-21s or under-23, sorry, and get beat, I think everyone will think, well, why don't we just go for it? Because the league, let's face it, the league's over, unless there's a miracle.
Well, and it's also, the only point I'll add to that is it really important that Liam Moore gets another 3 days rest before we play Hull at home on Saturday? I don't think it is. Sure if you ask the player as well, I'm sure he'd absolutely want to play. And hopefully, you know, hopefully Mark Bowen knows that and that he's going to give it a go. A quick word on the whole game. We sort of mentioned it earlier. They're 5 defeats in a row now. 5-1 defeat to Brentford on the weekend, sold their two star forwards and all that. They've only lost 5 of their 14 away games this season, but really, you got to say that that is the sort of perfect Saturday game. And where are we now in the table? You look at 15th, 38 points, a win might knock us as high as sort of 13th. If we do lose that game, then I think, is it fair to say that we're 12 points off the playoffs now? We'd potentially be 15 with only 15 games to go. Anything but a win against Hull, or certainly a defeat, and we might as well say that playoffs done and dusted.
I think the stat is for the Championship is you normally in the last 10 years, 76 points has got you that sixth place, or around about 75, 76 points. And if you look at Reading's points now, they're going to have to go some to get that amount of points. I think it's like 2.1 a game points. And that's not happened for, God, Christ knows, 5-6 seasons. So will you see that happen in the last 15, 16 games of the season? I just can't see it. I can't see Reading putting enough form together to get that sort of point score. So as far as the playoffs are considered, we can talk about playoffs, I think they need a miracle to get in the playoffs now. I mean, that's not to say they couldn't finish 8th or 9th, but would you really rather finish 8th or 9th and have no cup run, or have a cup run and finish 12th or 13th? I think it's a no-brainer, really, isn't it?
No, that's a fair point. And also, I do think the season-to-season momentum is a genuine thing. We've certainly benefited from it before. You think of McDermott's first season and then how we got up to 9th in that one and then move forward. But you can also have it in the form of cup runs. So it's just important to end the season on a high and to keep it going for as long as possible. Speaking of things that we need to keep going for as long as possible, the Prediction League has got a bit more of an edge of competitiveness to it this week. Sim and Ollie both got the 1-1 draw against Cardiff. Yourself, Westy, got the 1-0 defeat against Bristol City. So congratulations on moving into third place, where Westy, Johnny and Ollie will have 14 points, Sims on 20, then myself on 27. So Westy, we're not going to do the prediction for Cardiff game because it's not, you can obviously give your prediction if you like, but in terms of going into the league, I will ask for your whole prediction then as we go into the next few days.
Do you know, I take no joy in getting that result right on Tuesday night, whenever it was, Wednesday night. I was on here, I think, the week before saying that I can't see Reading scoring, so I couldn't back them to score, and I just thought it'd be a one-goal game. So that's the only one of very few I've got right this season, unfortunately. But as for this one, the Hull at home, again, you have to be confident Reading would beat them at home. But again, I can't see us scoring too many goals, so I might go for another 1-0.
Well, I think I'm going to go 2-0 for the whole game because, yeah, you've just got to hope that you're playing a team that is utterly woeful. And we have had a few 3-0 wins at home this season, and hopefully we can find something, and 2-0 will be nice and comfortable, and I think we probably just sit on that and cruise through. Obviously, depending on the Cardiff game, and my personal take, if it was the pools, I'd probably say draw. Going 120 minutes and penalties and everything would certainly be a very, we need a bit of excitement in this season, so it probably wouldn't be a bad thing. And we'll be back next week, of course, to talk about all that's gone on in those two games. And then, of course, we've got another two games straight after that with West Brom in the midweek. And from then on, so episode 219 of the Tireless End podcast. Thank you very much for listening. Westy, as ever, a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
And we'll be back next week with, you know, it's always a temptation to say that it's a huge week in Reading Football Club's season as we go forward. And we are in February now. The business end of the season is approaching. All I can say this week is that I hope we have some actual business to attend to in the final weeks of the season. Until then, come on, you arse. Leave a trail.
you smile. Funny how the crowns always be betrayed, even when it seems on yourself. Funny how I always be betrayed. You smile, why? Why do you sit on this side of the tree? Please tell me why. Oh, why don't you break this old biscuit? Just stop.